Blog Talk Radio.
It is week two of the Impact Livecast going late night here in the PW Torch Livecast. I'm Mike McMahon with Andrew Socek. We're one of two people that watched Impact tonight at 10 p.m. And I say that, Andrew, because it doesn't seem like there's many people watching the show. Let's kind of start first with the news item from last Friday. 98,000. Yikes.
Yikes.
Now, of course, that doesn't include DVR viewership. I don't recall exactly when that cutoff is, because there's a cutoff when they count DVR viewership. I think it's within the first 3 days. So that may have had an upkick. It probably did. If there was a 3 day viewership on DVR, I mean, that number came out on Friday, so clearly that wasn't 3 days. But still, I expected it to be low. Didn't expect it to be that low. I know we kind of jokingly wondered if they'd be below 100,000 last week on the show. They were. And that's, I don't know, maybe I was giving them too much credit, but that's lower than I was expecting. How about you?
I think I thought it could be on the table. I expected they'd at least lose, say, 40, 50,000 people. I was maybe thinking 120 to 140 they would have had, but yeah, under 100 is scary. It's sad. I shouldn't be laughing at that.
I mean, they cut it in half, because they were at like 185 or 189, yeah, or whatever it was a week before. So they basically got cut in half.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I was thinking, you know, today, not, you know, I mean, it was 10 years ago or so, but man, they were doing 1.2 million viewers at times. So this is over 90% of the people that have watched Impact since 2010-ish, 2012-ish. They're gone. And no, I mean, it's scary. You know, seeing that number dip under 100,000, it's just their chances for renewal have got to be sinking.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, their chances for anybody picking them up just things feel dire at the moment.
They do.
To me. Yeah,
no, they do. I mean, I don't know if maybe things will change in the next month or so, or maybe the arrangement will change. But if Jason Powell of ProWrestling.net is correct, and he had this on Wade Keller's Pro Wrestling podcast a couple of weeks ago, Pop is paying them $1 million a year for the show. It's not on a barter deal. It's a very small rights fee, but $1 million a year is what they're getting paid to air the show in the United States. I mean, what's Pop putting on at 8 o'clock on Thursday nights now? It's reruns of the Gilmore Girls. They're not replacing it with another first run, you know, new programming. So I said it at the time, I have no reason to believe otherwise. The move to 10 o'clock was, to me, the beginning of the end on Pop TV, at least in their current incarnation. It's possible that Pop, or that Impact, goes back to Pop and is willing to go back to a barter deal, and maybe Pop looks at it and says, well, hey, if it's not going to cost us anything, we'll keep it on the air. So I'm not completely ruling out that they won't re-sign with Pop. But if they're still looking for a rights fee, I think Pop's done paying for the show, because if they were happy, they wouldn't have moved it out of the 8 p.m. time slot and replaced it with Gilmore Girls reruns. I think they're done paying for it. So they could still stay on Pop. If they do, though, it's probably going back to a barter deal. I mean, I don't see any other way. But even still, like, at this point, I would be surprised to see them remain on Pop after the end of the year.
I would, too, at this point. And I don't know what they can even do after this. I mean, maybe they can try to just run events, pay-per-views or something. I just don't know. I mean, this is certainly not what Ed Nordum signed up for when he took over this company. This has to be, you know, worst case scenario. It's tough to, you know, and the thing is, too, I mean, tonight, I guess, was pretty good.
Yeah, I thought the show tonight was pretty good.
Yeah, it was a pretty good show, but I mean, 100,000 people out there are watching it. You know, more people with DVR are going to tune in, but I assume there's tens of thousands of fans who are just like, eh, it's just too inconvenient now. I'm done. And they will join the other 1.1 million people who have left over the past 6 years or so.
Yeah. It does kind of feel like we're in a bad place right now, at least with this show and with this company and where it could go. You can shoot us emails. We actually already have some emails in the inbox that we're going to get to later. Impactlivecast@gmail.com. So if you have any impact thoughts or thoughts on their viewership drop or what it could mean or where they could go, shoot us an email, impactlivecast@gmail.com. We'll get to emails in just a little bit. I know we've brought up this topic, it seems like, a million times on this show in the year and almost 2 years that we've been doing it. Let's say that Pop goes away. Pop decides, you know, we're done. It's been a 2 or 3 year or however long experiment that they've had with Impact, but we're done with them. We're no longer going to air Impact Wrestling. Where do you think they could logically go? Do you think there's a network out there that is looking for this type of programming and might look at Impact and say, okay, you know what? They used to have a million people. Now they're down to 100,000. But, you know, over the summer, they were at 400,000, and they're on Pop TV, which nobody's heard of. Is there a network out there, do you think, that is looking for new programming that might look at the numbers from 2012, 2013, and then might compare to the numbers on Pop and say, yeah, it's half of what they were doing on Spike or a third of what they were doing on Spike, but they're on crappy little Pop TV that nobody even knows if they have. Is there a bigger network you think out there that believes they can get the show maybe at a bargain rate, you know, pennies on the dollar considering where they are now, and give it the exposure that might be able to build the audience back up? It does. I'm struggling with, does that network even exist?
Right. The only thing I could think of would just be a wild card, because something like a BN Sports, which I had never heard of until Major League Wrestling joined it. So maybe there's something out there just random or growing at the moment. And they're looking for something to get them any sort of buzz whatsoever. But yeah, I think a couple of months ago, we kind of looked through a bunch of networks and none of them stood out to us at that time. And that's before they were demoted to a worse time slot. So maybe True TV before after Impractical Jokers or something. I'm struggling. I'm struggling to think of anything. I mean, Destination America, maybe they could go back to, but that wasn't a good fit. I think the dream of any major player picking them up is too far fetched at this point. So, I don't know. I got nothing. How about you?
Not really. No. I mean, I kind of feel like we're in the same spot we were in under the Dixie Carter ownership, which is like you're waiting for this white horse to come in and just save the company, but it never comes. Right. You know, the one thing I'll say, and this is information that I'm not sure we'll ever know the answer. Or a question we'll never know the answer to, but who were the runner-ups to Fox in that SmackDown deal? Who else was interested? Who else was bidding? Who was Fox bidding against? I mean, it wasn't just USA and NBC Universal. There had to have been some other players in there. That might be a small indication of at least who's interested in being in the wrestling market, because not every network is going to want to be in the pro wrestling game, you know? But if we kind of knew, if it ever came out with, okay, these are the three networks that Fox beat out for SmackDown, that might at least give us an indication of who might be interested in putting pro wrestling on their channel. I just don't know that we'll ever get that information.
Yeah, I agree. And then, that to me, even that is a long shot, because the people that were trying to potentially bid or woo WWE, they may have never heard of Impact.
The only reason I even brought it up is because it could be, okay, you know, they were going to spend, $1 billion on SmackDown. Here's an opportunity for them to get Impact Wrestling for $1 million and, you know, maybe try to make something work out of nothing. But, yeah, I don't know that. It all depends on the network, because A, you need someone that wants to put wrestling on their channel, and then B, you need someone, the network needs to be willing to go with, the a non-WWE product. The network needs to be able to go with someone that isn't as good as WWE. Some networks, I think, are going to say, well, if I can't have the best wrestling product, I'm just not going to have any.
Mm-hmm. I think that's probably what's going to happen. Because it's not like it was, you know, kind of, I've been hitting on this a couple times tonight, but it's not like it was 6 years ago where you could say, well, WWE has 3 million viewers, but TNA at the time, they've got 1 million. So that's something. I think anyone interested in the company at all would look at the ratings history just over the past year and to see it go from 400,000 to 100,000 and just go, wow. I mean, we would have to do a lot of work just to bring this back up to what it was. And would that be worth it for them? I don't know. It seems like a tall task for them.
Yeah, it does. It really does. Okay, let's get to looking at this week's show. We'll run down the show, and then we'll get to emails at impactlivecast@gmail.com. Actually, you know what? Let's go to our first email first, because this one has to do with the opening match in the show, which was Rich Swann defeating Willie Mack in about 12 minutes. And this email comes from Landon Pipkin. Landon writes the weekly Impact Wrestling overview columns on pwtorch.com, so make sure you check those out. Landon says, hey, Mike and Andrew, the opening match on Impact was really good, but should Willie Mack be losing clean in his singles debut? I think Mack has limitless potential, and this seems like a mistake. And that comes from Landon in Raleigh, North Carolina. Yeah, Andrew, that's an interesting one, because Rich Swann gets the win in about 12 minutes over Willie Mack. It seemed a little weird to me. My guess here, and we'll see how this plays out, but Willie Mack asked Rich Swann to be his opponent. Rich Swann then gets the win over Willie Mack. I don't know if it would work with Willie Mack as a heel, but it kind of feels like they're setting up a heel turn where maybe Willie Mack turns on Rich Swann and says, hey, you know, you screwed up my debut or something. That was kind of my read on the situation when I watched the match play out. It was the first thing that came to my head is hey, you know, this, they're kind of setting the stage perfectly here for a Willie Mack heel turn. I don't know that works, though, with his character, especially this early. What did you think there? What did you think of Willie Mack taking the loss? Where do you think it goes? Do you think it's too soon for him to be taking a loss like that, considering it's his singles debut?
Yeah, I thought that was a pretty big mistake on their part. I mean, if you look back at the last pay-per-view, they were hyping him up as basically his first appearance. And so you're asking people to pay money to see this big new star. And then he loses his first match, a singles match, and he lost to Rich Swann, a guy that loses a lot. So, I mean, what are you saying with that? If you're trying to use him to get Rich Swann over, that just seems pointless to me. There's better ways of going about that. You know, I said right away, they should just keep those guys away from each other. Willie Mack, I think, could be a big star, and they need top guys that are cool, because their top guy right now is Johnny Impact, and he's, you know, kind of not the coolest guy out there. So they could have Willie Mack waiting in the wings. So to turn him heel would be a mistake as well. I don't see a feud between Swann and Mack going over that well. Just not needed at all. I think it was a pretty big mistake on their part, and not sure what they we're going for with that.
Yeah, the only reason why I even brought it up is because it kind of feels to me like, okay, if they're going to turn him heel, they don't care if they give him a loss, because he's going to turn heel anyway.
Right.
So it just feels like the groundwork is there for him to turn heel on Rich Swann. And then if they were going to turn him heel, they don't care whether he wins or loses. That's why it was the first thing that came to mind. But if they're going to keep him a babyface, I don't know what you do with him now. You know, you know, you had him lose in his singles debut after – you know, challenging his friend to the match. So I just don't know what you do with him.
No, exactly. I mean, you know, last week they were just joking around, having some drinks. The week before that, he wasn't even on the show. And then you saw that his appearance at the pay-per-view, he got a huge pop and people were really into him. And the thing is, you know, you watch the match and they're like, Rich Swann was a former cruiserweight champion. Well, WWE didn't really want him anymore because there was a big controversy. So he left. Willie Mack is a new guy. Most people haven't seen him. Invest in him. He's got a ton of charisma. He's a good promo. He's a lot of fun. And you have him lose the very first match. Just very, very strange booking.
Yeah. Don Callis, I think, made a comment during this match at some point, like, who books this stuff or something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. That And I hate that. I hate that sort of stuff. Yeah,
which we'll get to later, actually, in an email. A very interesting email, but we'll get to that in a second. Cool. We'll finish running down the show first.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
What did you think of the new Desi Hit Squad? As Gamma Singh called it, the new and revised Desi Hit Squad. They beat the Beach Bums in 4 minutes. The Beach Bums, yeah. It was a typical squash match. They kind of got their big aggressive Desi Hit Squad moves in. We found out that the guy who debuted last week is actually Gamma Singh's son, Raj Singh. Yeah. So, hey, I wrote in my report on PWTorch.com, the company needs tag teams, so... I mean, I guess it works for now, right? Because they don't have any, really, with the exception of the OGs and LAX. So the company needs tag teams and OVE. But now the company needs tag teams, and this is another one. So I'm expecting – I don't know what you thought of these guys. I'm expecting to see them get a decent push now that they've hit the reset button on the team and they've added Raj and took out I think Samir was his name. That they've added the new guy and they kind of built him up as being a legit tough guy, and he does kind of look like a pretty mean brawler, I assume and expect that we're going to see them get a push. If not, you know, I don't know why they'd bother hitting the reset button on the team if they weren't going to do anything with them again. So I don't know what you thought of these guys, but I'm expecting them to be elevated here over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think so too. They're a better incarnation than what they were. I just think that the Desi Hit Squad is kind of a failed gimmick. Because
but now it's new and revised.
Yeah, exactly. I think mainly because Gamma Singh just, he's the mouthpiece and he's pretty terrible on the mic. I mean, last week he had some good stuff when he introduced himself, but that was the only good moment I've seen from him so far. Raju, I'm sorry. I think he has potentials as a single star. I just don't see them carrying this on as heels and having them feel like actual credible threats to LAX. I think that's a bit of that's a lot to ask for at this point in time. Maybe they'll get there and maybe I'll be wrong, but I'm just not seeing it. But yeah, again, it is a better incarnation for whatever that's worth.
I have to hit the pause button on Impact here for a second. As I'm scrolling through Twitter, this is not a joke, okay? Mm-hmm. This is from Ryan Satin at Pro Wrestling Sheet, who tweeted out, Shane McMahon's wife, Marissa, apparently produced a movie about a journalist who was assassinated by a government that didn't like the journalist's reports. And it comes out this weekend.
Oh, no. Whoa.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, man.
And he has a screenshot here of Shane McMahon's tweet from earlier today. Incredibly proud of my wife, Marissa, for producing her amazing film, A Private War, based on a true story. Yeah, no kidding. Based on a true story of war journalist Marie Colvin. It opens this weekend in New York City and L.A. and theaters nationwide on November 6th. Watch the trailer, and then he puts a link to the trailer. So how about that?
Yikes on that as well.
That is irony.
Good luck with that at the box office.
Yeah, I hope everyone has fun watching that show tomorrow. I'm busy, so.
Oh, is that? Okay, yeah, I'm not watching either.
Tomorrow, I think. It's probably like middle of the day. I don't think I'd watch it anyway, but honestly, I'm actually busy. I think it's at like noon or 1 o'clock or something because it's Saudi Arabia.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. All right, back to I was going to jokingly say back to the train wreck we cover here on the show, but this show wasn't a train wreck tonight. Vignette aired on King, Homicide, and Hernandez. They were on the streets of New York. and King said they were going to get Conan's boys. After a break, they aired a video on LAX. They were hanging out at a bar. They were talking about the OGs. Then a video package aired on Eddie Edwards and Moose, which will take place at Final Hour next week. Have they mentioned anything about next week's show being called Final Hour until tonight?
No.
Okay.
No, they didn't. I didn't know there was a special event until tonight.
Me neither. So I was making sure I didn't miss something last week or was completely, you know, the late night shows, Andrew. I thought, hey, maybe I fell asleep when they talked about this Final Hour thing last week because I don't remember it at
right.
all. Okay, but I'm glad I'm not alone. Then we went to Rockstar Pro Wrestling in Ohio, where OVE beat up on a Brian Cage imposter. Then Jake Crist, I think it was, put a referee shirt on after beating up a referee and counted Callahan's pin on the imposter Brian Cage as Callahan held up a fake X Division championship. What'd you think of this? Because two parts. I thought the angle was the idea behind the angle was fine. Like, if they did the angle in New York at the Melrose Ballroom, fine, cool, whatever. Mm-hmm. You can make up some excuse. The announcers can say that, hey, Brian Cage isn't here tonight or whatever. Fine. The setting of, no offense to Rockstar Pro Wrestling, it looks like they were wrestling in somebody's basement.
Yeah, it looked like my basement. I'm wondering if that's what that noise was. Yeah, that was bad. I mean, unless you, God, no, even if you're running like the best angle and it looks that bad, just don't put it on national TV. It's guaranteed to, you know, if you tune in and you see that, you're just going to go, oof, I'm not watching this. No, it didn't look good. And I think you're right. I think that would actually have been kind of fun. You know, the guy doing the Brian Cage impression looked enough like him. He had the mannerisms down. It could have been kind of fun. But yeah, showing that wasn't so hot, and neither was Brian Cage threatening to beat up every single person in Ohio, which seemed a bit extreme to me.
He's not going to be a babyface in Ohio, I can tell you that. He wants to kill all of Ohio.
He wants to drill claw, I don't know, 2 million people. I have no idea how many people live in Ohio.
Everyone in Ohio.
That's going to be a long couple months for him.
It will be. It's going to take a while to do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Then we went to Eli Drake was walking into a lawyer's office, but he opened the door and he was actually in a janitor's closet with Joseph Park, who was eating Chinese food. And Drake told Park that he needed a lawyer because he was suing Impact Wrestling for an unsafe work environment. Park said they should make it a class action lawsuit and they could own the company. Drake seemed intrigued by this, but walked away, and Joseph Park kind of look goofy in the background. Where do you think this is going?
I just imagine Scott D'Amore watching this and just like laughing so hard just he falls off of his chair and his tears are just coming out of his eyes.
He's eating Chinese food. Get in because he's fat.
Joseph Park. Oh my God. You know, before I get to that, my thought tonight watching this is Eli Drake is probably one of their, arguably one of their top five performers on the show. You're purposely taking this guy and putting him in crappy segments every single week. Like you're doing stuff. You could have a better show, but instead they're just screwing around. And I don't know, unless he's hurt or something they need to work him on the show. Otherwise, this is a waste of time. And where do I think it is headed? Oh, I honestly think they don't have an idea of where it's headed or a good idea of where it's headed.
Yeah.
I don't know. A Joseph Park match. I mean, it's, you know, considering his open challenge ended to La Parca and then to Abyss. I don't know. I can't think of anything good. And I don't think they have anything either. What do you think?
I have no idea. Yeah. Legit. No idea. You know, I don't know. And who knows? We may never see the payoff. If it's a long-term thing and they're off TV come December, we may never actually see the payoff.
I have no clue. Maybe he becomes an authority figure of some sort. I know Don Callis says he doesn't like them, but
you know, part of me wonders, honestly, is this kind of the angle they're setting up in case they're not renewed? You know, do they turn it into an angle where Eli Drake has sued the company and it's an unsafe work environment And he wins the lawsuit, and therefore they need to be taken off the air or something. Like, honestly, as dumb as that sounds, like, are they kind of laying the groundwork for having an excuse to be off the air if they need to be off the air for an extended period of time or a short period of time before they land somewhere else or start producing the show for YouTube or Hulu or whatever?
I mean, I would love it if that was the case, just because, like, he could be known as a guy that, like, killed a company. It wouldn't do him any good in Impact. And I would appreciate the thought going into, you know, having an explanation as opposed to just turning into Impact one week and being like, oh, more reruns of the Gilmore Girls at the 4 hours.
Well, the only reason, granted, it's a whole different management team, but back when they did the World Title Series in 2015 or 2014, whatever that was, I remember coming out of Bound for Glory. Remember that they had the thing where, like, Matt Hardy was suing Impact.
Oh yeah.
And it came out later that I think it was in the Wrestling Observer that they thought at one point I think there was an out clause or an option that Destination America could decline. So they believed at one point that they were going to get just kicked off the network in like September, and that's why the World Title Series happened, because they weren't going to do anything creatively because they weren't sure they were going to be on TV. So they just taped a bunch of matches, and then once they found out they were going to stay on the air, they kind of stitched this tournament together. But the original story was going to be that Matt Hardy sued them or did whatever he did, because it had something to do with the world title. I forget exactly what it was. But the story was essentially that if they got kicked off the air, the story was going to be that Matt Hardy got them kicked off the air.
Wow.
I remember, I remember reading that.
They could be recycling that one. Wow, that, what an ending.
Yeah, I know, right? And again, like with the Hardy thing, it was going to be just for however long a period of time before they could come back on, you know, another network. I think this was Destination America when they did the World Title Series.
Yeah, it was. Yeah,
2015.
Ooh, and that was a brutal few months.
Yeah. Oh, that was. I was actually looking forward to it at first because I'm like, oh, they're actually going to wrestle. This will be good. But it ended up being just a bunch of random matches.
Months. Yeah.
All right, then, speaking of pointless segments, the Desert Hit Squad was backstage, and then Scarlett Bordeaux just randomly appeared. Gamma Singh told the Desert Hit Squad that they needed to back up because they can't be thinking about girls. Gamma then sang in Indian to Scarlett, who asked what it meant. Rohit Raju butted in and said it means that he's a 65-year-old man who's been married for 45 years. Scarlett asked Gamma Singh if India is where they wrote the Kama Sutra. Gamma said yes. And then Scarlett said he should send her a video because she has a talent search going on. Yep, my thoughts exactly.
Just another Scott D'Amore chuckle fest that him and, I don't know, maybe somebody else is kind of politely laughing along with him backstage.
At least that's an explanation.
Yeah, terrible. I mean, it went right after that Abyss thing too. So this was the point in the night where I'm like, oh my god, this show is just gonna suck. What am I doing? Why am I staying up for this? I'm again like, please just end this Scarlett Bordeaux stuff. Have her get in the ring. Have her manage somebody. Get to the freaking point. It's not fun. It's not entertaining. This is the kind of crap that got them kicked off of their time slot. I don't know. Words escape me at the moment. It sucks.
Something that did not suck, though, was Taya Valkyrie defeating Tessa Blanchard via disqualification. In 15 minutes, Tessa Blanchard retained the Knockouts title. I thought this was a really good match, and I'm fine with the DQ finish. I mean, a lot of times people will complain and say, no, they gave you a screw job finish in the end. I thought this was good. I think it gives Tessa heat for doing it after such a great match. I mean, because I thought this match was really good. I thought it was better than the Bound for Glory match. Yeah. And for Tessa to kind of screw the audience out of the finish by hitting the referee to retain her title, I thought put heat on her. You combine that with the fact that it was a good match. I thought it was better than their Bound for Glory match. This makes me more excited to see Chapter 3, which I'm sure we're going to see at some point, especially with the screw job finish. I thought this segment, this match, was probably the best thing on the show.
I will agree with that. They work really well together. And I will give Impact some credit for actually kind of setting up this angle of her decking the ref. They did that in the pay-per-view. So, yeah, I'm up for another match. I'm sure it'll be a gimmick match this time around. But, it was definitely, I will say it was the highlight of the night as well.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other pro wrestling media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at pwboom.com. Once again, that's pwboom.com.
Then they went to a video on Killer Cross versus Johnny Impact. That's the main event of Final Hour next week. The GWN flashback aired. Pentagon and Phoenix cut a promo on OVE. Brian Cage appeared backstage. He cut a promo and said that he was never invited to Ohio. Surprise, surprise. But he told Sammy Callahan that it was fine. Cage said he would be at Rockstar Arena next week, and this is where he basically said he wanted to murder everyone in Ohio. Josh Matthews and Don Callis reset the show at the announce position. One thing, too. I did not mention this. In a video package earlier on Eddie Edwards and Moose, this happened before the Rockstar Pro Wrestling segment aired. A funny line in that video package was Moose was talking. He was being interviewed, and he said, Eddie Edwards might call what I did to his wife a kidnapping, but I call it mind games. It's like, no, it was kidnapping. Mm-hmm. Like you kidnapped his wife. So
it's a felony.
Yeah. unless it happens on Pop TV at 10 o'clock at night, because apparently nobody's watching.
Right.
All right, so then Josh Matthews and Don Callis reset the show. LAX beat Matt Sydal and Ethan Page to retain the tag team championship in 13 minutes. I thought this was a good match, but what are Matt Sydal and Ethan Page going to do now? Because they just teamed up, they very quickly get a title shot, and then they lose. I just don't know what's next for them. I mean, we talked about what's next for Willie Mack. What's next for Matt Sydal and Ethan Page when they get their title shot, they lose their title shot, and now what?
See, this is another thing I complained about Willie Mack before, having a lackluster first few weeks. And Ethan Page is just, once again, they have screwed up his character. Not as bad as when he was Chandler Park, but this is certainly not doing him any favors. And I'm also surprised they didn't just hold off on this match a week for, I forget the name of the show already.
Final Hour.
Final Hour. The very final
before the destruction of Earth, if you saw the video package at the end of the show.
The very last.
The final moment, hour before nuclear war takes over the Earth.
In that case, I guess I probably just won't do the show next week because I don't think I want the end of my life to be, watching Impact. No offense.
That's a good point. Yeah.
So, there's so few teams in the company. They could have built them up a bit more. They could have built up Ethan Page is a badass for a bit, but they didn't. They ran into this feud. They had him lose, and exactly, now what? I don't know. More faulty booking, I would say, unless there's some sort of master plan here, but there doesn't really seem to be.
No, there doesn't. Okay, then I'm going to try to get through this next segment as well as I can. Kira Hogan approached Allie backstage. Allie was looking in a mirror, but she was flickering in the mirror, because she doesn't have a soul. Mm-hmm. So apparently she also has no reflection. We've learned this tonight. So if you have no soul, if you look in the mirror, you will flicker because you also don't have a reflection. Then for about 30 very awkward seconds, Kira and Allie kept arguing over whether or not Allie was okay. Kira said, "Are you okay?" Allie said she was okay. Kira said she wasn't okay. Allie said she was okay. Kira said she wasn't okay. Allie, it just went on for like 30 seconds. You're not okay. I am okay. You're not okay. I'm okay. You're not okay. I said I'm okay. You're not okay. What's wrong? I'm okay. It was very awkward. Finally, Allie snapped and said that ever since she left her soul in the undead realm, there's been a darkness and void inside of her. And apparently she doesn't have a reflection if she looks in the mirror. Kira said that they needed to finish this thing with Sue because it started with Sue, and she would be with Allie until the end. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's pretty much my thoughts, too. Dead silence is pretty much my thoughts as well. Like, okay, well, this is what we're going to keep doing this. Okay.
I guess this was recorded maybe before they got the news that they were moving time slots. Maybe not, actually. I don't think. Well.
Yeah, you know what? No, because the time slot move came right before Bound for Glory.
You're right. You're right. So they should say to themselves, why did this happen to us? And they should look into the mirror, except for their reflections won't show.
They wouldn't be able to see anything.
Yeah, they have no souls. To me, this is part of the reason why people are just like, well, this is stupid. I'm not watching Impact. You've brought up before how they're trying to mimic the broken universe. I mean, that was a couple of years ago. The broken universe didn't get over in WWE a fraction as much as it did in TNA a couple of years ago. It's played out. It's goofy. You can't like build in major angles out of this week after week after week. And if you do try, you have to do it really, really, really well. And Impact does not. They're ruining everyone that is in this, because take Kira Hogan, move her away from all this nonsense. Had she just been an athletic, young babyface working her ways up the ranks, she could have got over in an effective way. But she's just being dragged down by this silly, goofy, murderous nonsense. And it's just a low light of every episode.
Yes, I could not agree more. Then the main event, Pentagon beat Homicide with a schoolboy at about the 10-minute mark. The match ended. There was a big brawl that broke out. Hernandez and King hit the ring. They ended up beating on Phoenix and Pentagon, and that's how the show went off the air. Well, then they threw to a video package at the end where Killer Cross narrated a video package hyping Final Hour, where he talked about the world ending and everything else. But yeah, that was the main event and the end of the show. Pretty good main event. I mean, it kind of felt inconsequential. I mean, there were some bigger things on the show, I thought. I thought that the Taya Valkyrie, Tessa Blanchard match was a bigger match. I kind of get why you didn't want to end the show with that, where it's a DQ finish. It would have been kind of awkward to end the show in a DQ and then just go to that video package and the show be over. So here, I mean, the baby faces get the win, but at least there was a decision in the match. So I'm not totally opposed to the way that they finished it off. But this match didn't really, it was a good match, but it didn't seem like it accomplished a whole lot either, other than just giving another reason for Pentagon and Phoenix and the OGs to brawl at the end of the match.
Yeah, I did enjoy the match. It did feel inconsequential, and I think part of that reason is just because Homicide has never, ever, ever in his entire TNA Impact career been treated as a serious threat as a single star. I mean, I would be surprised if he's won 5 singles matches in his entire Impact career in singles matches. It was fine. You knew what it was going to go, what was going to happen. But I mean, just the fact that the OGs are so good made it kind of rise above just just being bland. Yeah, I mean, it was good, but probably not the hottest way to end the night. But it was capped off a decent episode, a pretty good episode, I'll say.
Yeah, no, I agree. All right, let's go to emails. And again, you can email the show 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, anytime anything Impact comes up. If there's news that drops in the middle of the week and you want to comment on it or have a question about it, you can shoot us an email, impactlivecast@gmail.com. We'll empty out the inbox every single show. So if you shoot us an email, we will address it, answer it, or read it on the program. ImpactLivecast@gmail.com. All these emails came in tonight, but again, anytime during the week, if something hits, comes to mind that you want to discuss regarding Impact Wrestling, shoot us an email, ImpactLivecast@gmail.com. Our next email comes from David, a VIP member. He says, it's VIP member Dave from Tulsa here. Is it me or does Killer Cross's rhetoric make about as much sense as Bray Wyatt's gibberish from the past? At first, I thought Johnny Impact seemed like a confused goober, but the more I listened to Cross, the more I felt like Johnny. This feud is odd, especially because Austin Aries has been apparently wiped away from reality. David ends the email by saying, go VIP. And we agree. Go VIP. Mm-hmm. What did you make of – I mean, this is kind of – we've heard Killer Cross talk before. It's not like he's never spoken on the show, but he talked a lot tonight. The video package hyping him and Johnny Impact for next week, the video package at the end of the show that he narrated, there was a lot of Killer Cross talking on this show.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't good. It was silly. The destruction of the entire world is a bit too much. I mean, this is a guy, again, that he took 7 minutes to beat Tommy Dreamer. I'm not sure how that translates into 400 nuclear warheads going off and making humanity go extinct. The thing with him too is less is more. I mean, Bray Wyatt, as awful as his promos and redundant and as goofy as his promos became, he was at least a good actor to start, I would say. His stuff was really intriguing, and he was really fully into it. Killer Cross isn't even a good actor, really. He's okay. He's not embarrassingly awful, but having him spit out this rhetoric, this stuff that doesn't really make sense, and none of it's really clicking in an effective way. It's just, I don't think they have dialed in on what his character is. I don't think he's figured it out. The suit look, you know, he's teaming up with Moose. He's a henchman. He's, you know, he started off trying to, you know, almost kill a bunch of people. I don't know. It's not really working in any major way. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm in agreement there. I think less is more. I think if you allow, I mean, he can kind of give the same message and say the same things, but if he just does it with less words, I think maybe it's a little more impactful. Mm-hmm. It did seem like it dragged on a little bit, which is what I think David was talking about, especially. The more that he spoke, the more it seemed to drag on, and I think that's where you kind of lose some of the things that can string it together and help it make a little more sense. So, yeah, I agree. I don't mind him talking. I just think it needed to be a little tighter. And like you said, less is more. I think less would be better just because he's a guy that can do – I mean, you look at him, right? I mean, he can do his talking in the ring. I think that you want to have him be more one of those guys than somebody that's going to cut, you know, long promos, even if they are edited on a video package.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree. He's got a great look. He's intense in the ring, but those aren't really translating over to acting skills at the moment.
Yeah. All right. Our next email, and this one, there's a lot to unpack here. And I should preface this by saying we are going to assume the information in this email is correct, because this is from John in Elk River, Minnesota. He says he had a few friends over tonight watching Impact, and the discussion surrounded where does Impact rank as far as wrestling promotions. We'll get to that part in a second. But John from Elk River, Minnesota also said that he knows an insider at Anthem. He knows an accountant there. So some of this stuff, we're going to react to this as if it is 100% true. And I have no reason to believe that it's not. But I just want to preface by saying we're not reporting that these numbers are correct. We're going to react to them. But, you know, other than this email, I have no firsthand knowledge about whether or not the information here is 100% accurate. But we'll get to the part about ranking wrestling promotions in a second, but I want to get to this first. He says, knowing an accountant from Anthem, he had confirmed that there were 2,311 paying subscribers for their Global Wrestling Network app as of last month. And he says, I know in previous podcasts you and Andrew have surmised what this number may be. I guess let's take that part first. So 2,311 subscribers would mean at, what is it? Is it $10 a month or is it less? It's like seven, right?
Oh, I'm suddenly blanking. I want to say $7.99.
I think that's right. So 23, well, let me grab my calculator on my phone here really, really quick. 2311 times $7.99 would be $18,464 a month. So not I mean, hey, it's $18,000 a month more than what they were making a year ago, but not earth-shattering either. I mean, you do that over 12 months, and they're making about $221,000 a year.
Ouch. I mean, I'm sure they somebody's full at least one person's full-time job is to kind of help run that. They take TV time to promote it. Fascinating if that is the correct number. I know we were speculating, and I think we're guessing it was more in the 10,000 range.
Yeah.
When we did that a couple months ago. So that would be very, wow, 2,000 out of, okay, well, just kind of thinking in my head here. So not too long ago, 300,000 people were watching.
Well, yeah, that's
so
what I just did. Yeah, I just did 300,000. That's less than 1%.
So, yeah, roughly one in every 150 people who watch Impact were like, yeah, I'll spend $8 a month on it. Like,
I mean, you do the math, it's 0.7%.
Wow.
Whereas WWE, now granted, WWE is offering pay-per-views,
mm-hmm.
But they're at 1.5 million. And what do they get for Raw every week? Like 300, like maybe 3 million or something like that?
Yeah, I think a little under, but yeah.
But even let's use 3 million as a number, because it's just easy math. 1.5 out of 3 is 50%. So 50% of the WWE audience is signed up for WWE Network. 0.7% of the Impact audience, which is a third of WWE's audience, is signed up for GWN. And again, big caveat there: they don't. It's all just. Library content. There's no there's no pay-per-views or anything like that on the app, but a lot lower than I would have expected if this number is correct.
Yes, I'm kind of blown away by that. If that's legit, I mean those numbers are so small. You could work in the office and two people sign up that day, and it would be a cause for celebration, I guess.
I mean, I know they weren't generating a lot of pay-per-view views. I mean, I don't know how their numbers have been lately because they haven't really been reported. But back kind of at the end of their monthly pay-per-view run, where they were airing pay-per-views every month, I remember reading at the time that there were many of those pay-per-views that were under 10,000 buys.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when they were doing a million two on viewership, on Spike TV. It was just they were never able to monetize those viewers, and it kind of seems like it's the same situation here where the viewership they do have, they're having a hard time monetizing them.
For sure. Yeah, that's even a more troubling number than I would have guessed, and it's not much of a revenue stream. And wow. Scary.
Yeah.
Kind of, I would say.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
Okay, so then the other part that he talked about as far as Anthem, and then we can hit in the other part of John's email. He says, this one's from my main man, Kylan in New Jersey. I hate to break it to him, but Ed Nordholm has absolutely no say in Impact's creative direction. This, again, is according to someone he knows that works at Anthem. Sanjay Dutt and Scott D'Amore prep the storylines, and final decisions are approved by Don Callis. So... to answer Don Callis' question earlier in the night of who books this stuff, apparently it's Sanjay Dutt and Scott D'Amore.
That
doesn't surprise me.
No, yeah, it doesn't surprise me. It's that's kind of who we'd been hearing. They're not doing a very good job
No.
at what they're doing, basically. So Yes, thank you for the info, though. That is good to know.
All right, so let's get to the other parts of John's email. And again, this is John in Elk River, Minnesota. He said he was having a few friends over tonight watching Impact, and the discussion surrounded where does Impact rank as far as wrestling promotions. Obviously, WWE would be number one. But where do we see Impact ranking as far as New Japan, Ring of Honor, NWA, etc.? If you were going to take WWE, New Japan, Ring of Honor, and NWA, I think that Impact is below all of them. You know, maybe – actually, no, I wouldn't say all of them. They're definitely behind New Japan and Ring of Honor, I think. I think right now you have to say that they're ahead of the NWA just because they have a television deal right now and the NWA doesn't. So the NWA might be more fulfilling creatively. I think people might find what the NWA and Billy Corgan is doing and Dave Lagana to be a better creative product, but you can't put – the NWA, I think, above Impact, considering the Impact is on television. Even if it's a minor television clearance, they're on television. So, but, I mean, do you disagree? I think New Japan and Ring of Honor are clearly ahead of them at this point.
Oh, yeah. Far, far, far ahead. I've never seen numbers for what Sinclair is doing with Ring of Honor, but I, you know, maybe a few hundred thousand people when you, think, if you add them. Yeah.
If you add them all up, I mean, they're on however many affiliates they're on. I know I've heard Jim Cornette talk in the past about how there have been some markets, you know, where wrestling had been big, like in the you know, of course it's Jim Cornette, so it's in the Smoky Mountain territory basically, but you know, West Virginia area and stuff like that, where there were some local affiliates that were doing, you know, 15 or 20,000 viewers for Ring of Honor back when he was there. I've heard him talk about stuff like that before. So yeah, I would imagine they're doing at least a few hundred thousand.
Yeah, so that puts them far above. You know, they're able to, it seems, offer out more contracts. I'm sure they sell more merchandise, their honor club that they have going. I know Lucha Underground wasn't mentioned, but just due to the past couple weeks, I mean, Lucha Underground is arguably above them now because their ratings, even though they're in the low 100,000s, are now higher than what Impact is doing. So, yeah, I don't. Sixth place, seventh place, somewhere in there.
Yeah, I mean, I would say if you were going to, it's at least fourth because New Japan, Ring of Honor, and WWE are clearly ahead of them at this point. So the highest argument you can make is probably number four. But like you said, I think you can make a valid argument for Lucha Underground. I mean, because Impact's not touring either. I mean, Lucha Underground doesn't tour, but really neither does Impact other than their TV tapings. Impact's on pay-per-view more than Lucha Underground is, but... You know, I don't know. Yeah, I think it's four at the highest.
I think so, too, which is, you know, even maybe 3 years ago, you would still probably say they were at least second in the United States. You know, remember when Ring of Honor and Impact were both on Destination America, you know, Impact was doing twice the numbers that Ring of Honor were. Though if you add up all the Sinclair stations, they... Well, then it gets kind of it. Yeah. I'm not sure.
I mean, so I wonder too. Like, if you were to separate NXT from WWE,
yeah,
you know, I'd put NXT ahead of. Honestly, I mean, NXT might be ahead of. What might be number two? you know, I don't know how many people stream NXT week to week. We'll never know that because those numbers will never come out. But everybody, I mean, I was listening to the WWE quarter three financials last week, and they said the in-ring stuff, the in-ring programming is that's always their number one programming. They've got a million, almost 1.6 million people subscribed. So is it crazy to think that there's 800,000 or 900,000 people watching NXT on a weekly basis? You know, if half of the subscribers are watching NXT, there's 800,000 people.
Even if 10% are watching, that's more than Impact is doing.
Yeah, exactly. 10% is 160. So, I mean, yeah.
1 in 10 people, yeah. So, yeah, NXT. I think I don't know the New Japan financials as well. I'm not a huge follower of the promotion, but from what I hear, they've been doing pretty well. So, they're 2? NXT 3? 4? Yeah. Ring of Honor? 5? Impact, maybe?
Yeah. Somewhere in that area, but definitely lower. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
Sure. All right. Then the bottom part of his email, John says, lastly, why does Impact's ring look so small? Willie Mack jumped from the top rope and connected with a dropkick on Swan, who was hung up in the ropes on the adjacent side of the turnbuckle. Is there a standard size ring? WWE doesn't look that small. I'm just curious. There are different sizes. I know I've heard guys talk about different sizes. I think WWE uses a 20 by 20 ring. Let's see. WWE ring size. They might be using a 22 by 22. Nope. WWE uses a 20 by 20. But I've heard of rings that are, I think, 22 by 22. I also know that WWE has different size rings themselves. They used to run a tour that I used to go to when I was a kid. They used to call it the Tent Tour up here in the Northeast. There's like a lot of outdoor music theaters around here that operate in the summer. And WWE would do a tour where they would hit all of them. There's one on Cape Cod, there's one in New Hampshire, I think there's one in Maine. And they used to do a weekend and do a loop where they play these smaller, like, outdoor music tents. And they would take – I remember reading a story, I think in WWE Magazine about this when I was a kid or a teenager. They would take a 16 by 16 ring to those shows because of there wasn't enough space to set up the ring – to set up a normal size ring. So it looks like that's what Impact had to do here as well. Because the Melrose Ballroom does not seem like it's a large arena. So, I didn't compare it to what the ring in Orlando or Mexico looked like, but it does definitely seem like it's smaller. I remember being at some of those shows, those WWE shows when I was a kid, and you go from a 20 by 20 ring to a 16 by 16 ring. I mean, it's 8 feet less. It's not 4 feet less. It's 4 feet on each side. So it's 8 feet less all the way around. There were guys, you know, I remember watching in particular, this is probably like around 2006, the main event of one of those shows was Kane against, I think, Kofi Kingston. And Kane went to go run the ropes and would take, you know, like one step or two, you know, two steps and he'd be on the ropes on the other side. Just like one, two, boom, one, two, boom. It was crazy. But yeah, I think they are probably using a smaller ring. Did you get the impression, Andrew? Does it look like they're using a smaller ring?
Yes, for sure. I think I was actually going to text you that during the Bound for Glory show. I think they usually use, I don't know, 18-18 or 20-20 maybe. But I think for this show they have been using the smaller one. And yeah, it does kind of take a while to get used to just because growing up, you're used to the 20-20. And that's kind of what wrestling is to you. So when you see guys making kind of awkward runs at each other and everything is just timed slightly different, and it doesn't quite feel right unless I guess you never really watched WWE growing up, because I think even WCW did 18-18s, maybe.
I was just trying to look that up. Yeah, it looks like WCW used an 18 by 18, and it said that WWE was using an 18 by 18 for a while, according to the story I found here. But when they redesigned their rings, when they went from the old blue rings, which from what I understand were hard as a rock, when they went from those to the red rope rings, I guess you could call them, they went from an 18 by 18 to a 20 by 20. So yeah, it does seem like that's when they made that jump. And in fact, I think I remember Chris Jericho talking about when he made his move from WCW to WWE that one of the things he needed to get used to was the bigger ring size, and that it was a bigger adjustment than he had anticipated, I believe. I think it was Jericho. It was definitely somebody. It could have been, you know, it could have been Benoit or Eddie Guerrero, one of those guys too. But I want to say it was Jericho, who I remember either reading in his book or listening to an interview at some point where he talked about the difference in having to get used to the bigger ring.
Right. I think you're right. You know, I remember back in the day, people would say it was because guys like Hogan and Piper didn't want to run as much in the ring, and like Hogan got that changed. Who knows? But yeah, I mean, this was 16-16, and it does look like it's like what you would see at a small indie show, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the last part of John's email says, can we please get rid of the Desi Hit Squad? Nobody cares. we kind of talked about that earlier, but yeah.
You know, I don't.
They're back for now.
They're back for now. You know, last week we were kind of speculating it might be due to the India deal and Sony 6 is paying them more money than they're making from anywhere else right now. So, you know, they are keeping them on the show. I would think they would be better served in other roles. And Gama Singh, I don't think he has a good promo in him. So I would dissolve the group and move the members into different parts of the show.
Yeah, I think that would probably work best. Although at the same time, they don't have tag teams. So just
True.
Do what you can do, I guess. Let's see here. So I just went to Shane McMahon's Twitter feed, and I'm just scrolling through the comments on this tweet that people are leaving him. It's just hilarious. You can cut the irony with a bone saw. that's wildly inappropriate. He's getting... this is a joke. This is unbelievable. You really can't even make this stuff up. Yeah, he's getting ripped to shreds. One person just went, dude, really?
Mm-hmm. I hope he reads it at least.
This can't be real. LOL, awesome timing. there's some people that just some people are like, congratulations, so excited to see this.
Oh, come on, people.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. This is ironic. I'm glad that the irony wasn't just lost on me. The irony wasn't lost on other people.
Yeah.
Somebody wrote that they're dying to watch. I don't know if that's legitimate or if that was someone being snarky. In my mind, it's someone being snarky, which that's, is
yeah.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
yeah. So I'm surprised. Oh, there's actually a lot of positive ones on here, which is surprising. A lot of people that are just like, so happy for you and your family.
A guy who has $50 million. I'm so happy that his wife is making a movie.
Yeah, me too.
Congrats, everyone.
Highlight of my day.
Yeah. You've done it. You've achieved it.
Oh, this is the best one. someone just wrote, wow, Shane, great idea, but I've got an incredible story to share with you with a bunch of dots. I mean, how can you be that tone deaf?
The entire family is.
I just don't get it. I don't get how you could possibly be that tone deaf.
They just live in their own world, little world, I think.
Oh, it's amazing. It really, really is.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
All right, one thing else we should hit on before we close up this show. So Hulk Hogan's back.
Oof.
Did you see that?
Yeah, I was listening to Wade and Rich Van kind of dissect that today as well, that news.
Yeah, so if you missed it, he'll be back tomorrow. He's hosting Crown Jewel. Honestly, it's a dumb decision. I kind of wished he was never going to be back, but
yeah.
I will give them credit because it is smart to do it the way they're doing it because he's not going to get booed in Saudi Arabia.
Right.
So if you want the first uptime Hogan's on your television again to be a friendly reaction, doing it in Saudi Arabia is the place to do it. Here's the problem, though. The problem is the places where he's going to get booed out of the building – this is not going – people aren't going to watch Crown Jewel and go, oh, look at that big positive reaction Hulk Hogan got. When he's in my town, I'm going to cheer him now. No, the places that are going to boo him out of the building are still going to boo him out of the building. So It's going to – they're going to get what they want for a night, but it's not going to change anything.
It's just how gross can WWE be right now? I mean, they already have, the entire Saudi show going on, and they're just what else can we do to just make this horrifying for the entire human race? And bringing back the Hulkster is what they've chosen to do. And Hogan got me into wrestling as a kid, you get older and you realize that he's not that great of a person, and he's amazingly self-centered and lacks complete self-awareness. And I'll have that nostalgia for him. I guess I can watch an old match from 88 and have some fun, but I don't want to see him involved in wrestling. I don't want to see him draw a paycheck from wrestling.
Yes.
Basically.
Yep. One of the funny things, and this happened a while ago, but I remember when there was first talk, I think it was when he was reinstated into the Hall of Fame, I wrote something about how WWE is stupid to be, you know, implementing him back into their universe, for lack of a better term, again.
Mm-hmm.
And the responses were just crazy. Like, there was one guy who responded and said, well, you know, you have to cut him some slack. He was on videotape, and he didn't know he was being recorded. So, you know, it's invasion of privacy. And it's like, well, okay, that doesn't make it okay. Like, but there seemed to be a lot of that, of like, well, it was invasion of privacy. He didn't know he was on film. It's like, oh, well, okay. I mean, not to like take this to another level here, but like, oh, if he murdered someone and got caught on film, but he didn't know he was being recorded, like, well, what's the big deal? Like, he shouldn't be arrested for that. He didn't know that he was on film. It's like, well, actually, no. To me, that makes it worse. So you're saying if he knew he was on film, then he would make sure that he wouldn't, you know, put out that he wouldn't put out that he's a racist and what type of person he was, because, you know, he'd be fake and hide that, because that's what a good person does, I guess. I can't get the rationale of he didn't know that he was being recorded, therefore he's not responsible.
Oh, no, I don't get that either. I mean, people just have their heroes and they defend them to the death. And I mean, my favorite wrestler of all time is Raven. He got me hooked back into wrestling. But if I heard he, like, you know, was a dog murderer, I'd just be like, I'm never supporting him again.
Yeah,
you got
dogs are awesome. You
know, exactly. Like, I don't get how, you know, these people don't know Hulk Hogan personally. They just know his public persona. And, you know, you caught a private moment of him and it was awful. And it's like, well, that's probably what he's like in real life. Because as Wade pointed out, he, you know, said some really horrifying things when he didn't know he was being recorded with. No, he should have known he was being recorded when he was talking to his son in prison.
I was just going to bring that up. Yeah.
Yeah.
When he basically blamed the kid that his son almost killed.
Yeah. And then he said something.
Not even basically. He did.
He did, yeah. And he, like, oh, that guy had bad karma. He must have done really bad things in a past life, something to that effect. Yeah. It's just, it's horrible. He's not a good person.
No.
You know, and like Wade said, go make money off your beat shop. If you want to get Hogan's autograph, yeah, go get his autograph at his beat shop. But do I want to see him in WWE and have to have those weird feelings of, oh, do I actually want to cheer this guy? No, just I'd rather he's not around.
Yeah,
don't erase him from history. Just celebrate him today.
Yeah. I agree. One of those same people that brought up the, well, he didn't know he was on tape argument also brought up an argument of, well, how do you expect him to feed his family?
Like,
well, let's pump the brakes on how's he going to feed his family. I mean, what did Gawker have to pay him? $150 million? Plus all the money he made, you know, being a celebrity and being the most popular wrestler on the planet. Like, let's pump the brakes on how's he going to – I think he's going to feed his family just fine. Like, I think he's got that under control. I don't know Hulk Hogan's personal finances, but I think he's going to be able to buy his next meal.
Or he can't get a regular job if it worse comes to worse.
We're not saying you can't work. I'm just saying it's if I were running a major wrestling promotion, I would not want him to be on my television. But
no, I mean, if your regular job, if your coworker was caught saying a bunch of racist, horrible things and it, you know, blew up on Facebook or wherever, that person's losing their job and they're not coming back. And Hogan is.
Yes, he is. And he will be celebrated because that's what WWE does now, apparently. Just tone deafness all around. So kudos to Daniel Bryan. I was actually on Twitter earlier in the week. I gave a bunch of praise to John Cena, and I said, hey, good for him for standing his ground and not going to Saudi Arabia. He's one of the few people that could do it, and he did it, so good for him. I was riding that train for about 24 hours, and then I actually listened to Wade, who brought up a really good point of, hey, you know what? Maybe that is what John Cena's doing. Maybe he is. Maybe it is for you know his morals, his integrity. He doesn't feel like he can go over there. But Wade brought up the point of, you know, he's also trying to launch a Hollywood career. So at the same time, you know, what was his motivation? Was it, hey, I want to protect my Hollywood career and I know that people will frown upon the fact if I go on the show? Or was it a just morally, I cannot bring myself to go? If it's the latter, then good for him. The one I think who really needs to be praised this week is Daniel Bryan, because he definitely has the most to lose. WWE's not going to punish John Cena, number one. Number two, there's really nothing they can do to him at this point because he's not there that much. Ironic, considering what he would say about The Rock. When was that? 2010, 2011. But yeah, John Cena's not around that much, so there's not really anything WWE can do to punish him. Daniel Bryan, on the other hand, could be severely punished for this. I don't think that they will punish him for not going, because I think they will realize the optics of that would be horrendous. That being said, I also didn't think they were going to go through with this show to begin with. I also didn't think that they should bring Hulk Hogan back. So who knows what they're going to do? Because doing the right thing does not seem to be they don't seem to have a very strong history with that. So it's very possible that Daniel Bryan could be punished for saying, no, I'm not going to Saudi Arabia, which I think would make things incredibly worse. But I guess we'll see. But yeah, I kind of feel like Daniel Bryan more than John Cena deserves praise, because Bryan seems to be the one that really made a stand as a member of the roster who was on the show in a title match to say, I'm not going. He could face some serious repercussions, and I'm hoping he doesn't, but given WWE's track record, he very well could.
Yeah, I mean, he already lost to AJ Styles cleanly. I respect him for doing that. I am disappointed that nobody else joined him. I mean, I know it's a big payday, but just I'll throw out a name like Sheamus. You know, you could say, well, it's a huge payday, but the dude has made a couple million bucks over the course of his career. I don't even know if he's going to the event. I'm trying to stay away from it. But so many of these guys have made so much money to last for years and years and years. And it's, I don't know, just the idealist in me wishes a few of them would have banded together and just been like, no, it's too much. It's gross when we're not going. But maybe there's just things I just don't understand about it.
Yep. And also, while we have the airtime before we go off the air, screw you, Randy Orton. Did you see Randy Orton today? I think it was on TMZ. I saw the video.
Read about it, yeah.
He basically ripped John Cena and said, well, at least I'm going. Does John Cena even wrestle anymore? Like, shut up, Randy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Go over and take your Saudi money. And then Randy Orton's argument was, you know, well, he's got five children to feed, so that's why he's going. So,
oh, my God. I hate yeah. He's a guy that's made at least 20 million bucks at least in his career. If he has not saved it that well,
yeah,
he has problems.
I feel awful for him. So
yeah, God, poor guy. If he doesn't get this big payday,
yeah, exactly. Have fun going over there. I think that's it, right? Anything else we should touch on?
No, I think that's it. Yeah. That's it. What a world, huh?
It's a crazy one.
if you want to, you know, check out, trying to transition into that, but check out pwpodcast.com for written wrestling recaps. Check out the Pull Apart podcast. If you are a VIP member, Jeff Rush, Joe Aguinaldo, and Caitlin Lavelle do a great job talking about all the big podcasts of the week. They cover like a dozen of them. In just about an hour and a half, you know, tell you the big moments from each show, what you should listen to, what you should avoid. It's a lot of fun. Otherwise, if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm Andrew Souck.
You can follow me on Twitter at Torch McMahon. Andrew and I will be back next Thursday following Final Hour, assuming the world doesn't end. Andrew, we'll be back next week.
Oh, man, I hope so.
Yeah.
I mean, hope not, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, yeah. We hope not. We hope that we're here, not that the world ends.
Yeah, got to watch this Killer Cross match.
So we will be back next week. We will talk Impact with you again. And again, email the show, impactlivecast@gmail.com. So if you have anything you want to say, anything between now and then, shoot us an email, impactlivecast@gmail.com. We'll get to it on the show. If you're listening to us live, and I'm sure not many of you are, but thank you for staying up late with us. If you're listening to us on demand, like most of you are, we will talk to you again next week. So thanks again for listening. Thanks for downloading. For Andrew Socek, I'm Mike McMahon. This has been the Thursday live cast. We'll talk to you next week as soon as Impact goes off the air.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free addition to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including the review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan 4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.